Hello, hello. My name is Gordon Henry Dunwell. I was born on the 12th of January 1921 in a nursing home in Church Street in Boona. My parents, Arthur Dunwell, and my mother, May Rose Dunwell, and I have an eldest sister, Agnes Rose, a brother, Arthur Richard, and a younger sister, Rita May, and I lost a brother stillborn, Benjamin. My father had been a coal miner in Ipswich, and he finished that and he bought a farm at Boona, at Milford, and farmed for there for many years until he sold the farm and commenced a carrying business in Boona. And he had trucks and cars and petrol depot, oil depot, and a bus for hire for many years. I attended the Boona State School, rural school, and staying there till I reached 7th grade, and left school when I was 12 years of age, and went to work for the Boona Cash and Carry, Charlie Lindsay's grocery business, and we were working 60 hours a week, and I was being paid 3 shillings or 30 cents per week. It was that, there was no other jobs available, it just meant to work or do without. You know, every week I'd give my money to my mother, and occasionally I would be allowed sixpence or something like that to go to the pictures. Those days all the money went to the home, went to the house. Anyway, we were a happy family, and we lived in Boona, as I said, until 1939, when my dad took a mail contract from Toowoomba to Brisbane, and I went to Toowoomba with the man, drove the truck for about 3 years. This was the start of the Second World War, and things were very tough, and Dad used to pay me 5 shillings a week to drive the truck and keep, and that went on for a little while, and then things got very tough, petrol prices and everything went up, and he couldn't pay me anything at all, so we just carried on and went there like that until eventually we had to cease the contract in about 1941, I think it was, and he took on a share farm at Mergan. This was a very unhappy period for us. My sister Rita, Mum, Dad and I worked the farm, and very old cows, very poor set up, and we made very little money, didn't have much money at all. In fact, the cream was all cream with a hand churn, and we hand milked the cows, and we'd separate the cream and take it to the factory, and very, very poor return. We hardly made enough money to live on. As a matter of fact, I used to go down on an afternoon occasionally and shoot a hare. So Mum would roast that and we'd have a bit of meat to eat. And anyway, after a while I got a call up in the army in February 1942, and I had to leave the farm, and went in the army. And not long after, Mum and Dad and Rita finished on the farm and went to Dalby, where Dad got a job with the forestry department. And he then later on moved on down to Wynnum, and he lived in Wynnum until he died 2 days after he bought a new house. That's the story there. And in the meantime, I went to the army and went to Yeronga, State School of Yeronga, and we did a basic training there for 3 months. And then I went to, some sort of transferred, went to Townsville, and went on from Townsville, and some sort of went out to Mount Isa. We had about 6 months in Mount Isa, transport, and I was in the workshop there, repairing engines and cars and trucks. And I did a workshop course then, and drove my first bulldozer, in fact. And we came back to Townsville after that, and then we were formed up into platoons, and I was into 51 Australian Bipod Platoon, and there were 29 of us, I think, in charge of Tony Alexander, Lieutenant, and Ronnie King was our Sergeant, Bargain Quest Staff Sergeant, and we went to Merauke in Dutch New Guinea. We embarked, went to the staging camp in Cairns, Red Lynch, hell hole it was, and we embarked on the Vendolin, the old Alaska boat Vendolin. Went up overnight to Merauke, and no escort, of course, we just run the gauntlet at night time, and we were told next morning if an air raid on we arrived to leave everything, just get off the boat and get ashore. Anyway, eventually got ashore and set up camp in Merauke. We were on a ridge between swamps, amongst swamps, and we had tents there. We eventually swear it enough three-ply to make bedboards to sleep on, keep up off the ground, and away from the death adders and all that sort of thing. We had a long time in Rocky, and I eventually came back on leave in about 1943, early 1943. After about 3 weeks leave, we went to Geelong Police Staging Camp, waited there for a while, no leave there of course, having what we took, and then suddenly I had to been trained at Red Lynch. And we went out there and caught, I think it was the Katoomba. We went up to Thursday Island and transferred then, and then we went across to back to Meraki. After spending another period in Meraki, we then the unit was moved out back to Australia, and Staff Sergeant Doug Bargainquest and I came back to Thursday Island with our unit's equipment. We stayed there for several weeks with the equipment until it was eventually loaded on the T.M. Burke's vessel, the Wandana, a civilian boat, and we came back to Brisbane on that. We organised, another fellow, Robbo and I, organised bingo, or howsy-howsy game on the boat. We made a few quid out of this on the way back to Brisbane with the civvies. And then after another short leave, we went and we joined the unit and went back to Chermside Staging Camp. The unit left Chermside and went back to, or went up to Moratai in the Halmahera's Islands, and I was left behind with the unit equipment once again, and my duty was to make sure this was loaded on a boat and sent up to the islands. And anyway, this was eventually done after some weeks in Chermside. This was eventually done, and there was nothing about me leaving at all, and I was still stuck there, and I just wasted time. Well, they gave me one stripe in the meantime, made me Lance Corporal. I was just left there and I think forgotten about, and in the meantime the war ended, and I then made application to my unit in Moratai to release me, let me be demobilised. And that stirred them up, and the officer in charge then of the unit, he then decided I would be sent back to Moratai. They needed me up there urgently, and he asked for air travel for me, for John Coakley, and he was there with me at that time. And John and I flew back with a DC-3 aircraft. We flew back to Moratai, and I spent some months then sitting up in Moratai painting, spray painting petrol drums. And in the meantime, we watched the Yanks and everybody dismantle all the equipment. They took trucks and jeeps to the top of a cliff and run them over the side. And when they piled up a heap on the bottom of the cliff on the sand shore, on the seashore, they poured drums of diesel and petrol down into them and fired incendiary bullets and set fire to them. I know our one jeep we had only had a few hundred miles up on the speedo. Beautiful vehicles, it's a shame. They were just destroyed. And there was so much equipment lying around there. They sunk boats. I remember the when it was seven army ducks. They went out one morning and the boys all came back in one. They said they put an axe to the bottom and sunk them, of Moratai. I know there was a beautiful motor launch there, about 50-foot motor launch. Quite a lot of boats there, but this 50-foot motor launch, it had been a private one and they were going to sink it. And Artie Tregay and I, another mate of mine, we made application to purchase this thing, take our discharge in Moratai and sail it home. And we were not allowed to do this. Eventually they took it out and sunk it anyway, but it was a shocking waste of equipment. Eventually I was sent back to a staging camp, or transported back to Australia, and I spent some weeks there with the seven Divvy fellows, and we eventually come back on a LST landing ship tanks, and a big steel boat, and we come back, and coming back, we had a Corvette escort with us at this stage, the Deloraine, Corvette Deloraine. We come back down in the Arafura Sea. We went into trouble, and one motor went out in the LST, and we're only on one motor, doing about 4 knots. That's all we could do, just wallowing along. And as we hit the Queensland coast, the cyclone came in and gave us a very bad time. It was just before this happened, the Corvette hooked onto the LST and decided to tow us, and that we then increased speed up to about 8 knots with the Corvette towing us along. In the meantime, coming down the coast, the cyclone hit us there, and we had a very, very bad time. And this big longboat, LST, she wallowed and buckled around, and one morning we get up and there was an 8-inch bump in the deck where she'd buckled during the night. She nearly broke in halves. And we actually landed in Brisbane. Then went out to Salisbury staging camp, where I demobilised there in 1945, the end of 1945. And I went home, and then my job started. I had a job offered, of course, with the Dalwell Bacon Factory, K.O. Darling Downs. And I worked there then till 1949, late 49, not early 1950. And in the meantime, I studied for a stock inspector, meat inspector, and I passed that exam early 1949, right at the end of that year anyway. And I was then offered a job with the Department of Prime Ministries, where the Agriculture and Stock Department was those days. And I went to Brisbane head office and used to ride in there every morning with my motorbike, spend a day in the office. And then I did meatworks inspection at Doughboy, you know, Oxley Meatworks, and Murray. One fellow in charge of Murray Works had been shot in the hand accidentally, and I took over from him for about 3 months. I used to go to work in the morning, start about 7:30, and be home about 8:45, do about 40 sheep or 40 calves or 20 cows or something for the day. And it was very short days. Actually, that ended anyway, and I went back to head office, and I got a transfer to Warwick. When I got a transfer to Warwick, in the meantime, we decided to sell some of our boats, which we did, and the nets and all that type of stuff. And I got transferred to Warwick, and I went up my motorbike, of course. I'd bought a 1950 model Hillman, matchless motorcycle, and I rode that up to Warwick, and I used to come home and leave on a weekend when I could. And I did a lot of disease control work in Warwick, because that's all most of the work we did, vaccination and post-mortems, and we had an outbreak of blackleg in that time, and do a lot of post-mortem work, and we'd have to get heart blood specimens, and we had to suck that up with our mouth with a pipette and send that away. But anyway, it was interesting work. We did a terrible disease control work in Warwick. I was there in about 15-18 months, and I was granted an office of my own at Mergen. And in the meantime, I bought a little Hillman Roadster, and I had this on mileage with the department. We used to get about 4 pence a mile, I think. What's that, 8 cents a mile to run this vehicle? Anyway, I got transferred to Mergen, and I was on my own there with a dairy advisor and an office girl there. Mergen was very good. I did a lot more of disease work there, disease control work there. And then a private vet arrived, Ted Fisher, and Ted and I did disease control work between us. And then, but he took over gradually, and I gave it away. And I complained I didn't have enough work, and I asked for more area to handle. And I went to Brisbane to see the director, Rod Mulhern, and he said he'd do what he could for me. And a few weeks later, they rang me. Keith Grant rang me, my DVO from Maryborough, and said, "I've just got your transfer to Cunnamulla." I said, "Hell, where's that?" He said, "It's 604 rail miles west of Brisbane." Oh, good God. So anyway, we went out there, got married in the meantime, of course, living in Mergen. Vera and I, Mum and I got married. We had a nice flat in Mergen. Anyway, we then went out to Cunnamulla. We arrived with two ports on the platform at night time, went to a hotel, and found the office next morning. And we had a house there, of course. It was a seven-roomed house made of ripple iron, not lined or sealed, with cracks in the floor. When it rained, which it did occasionally, the water used to run through, and we used to run around with pots on the floor to stop the rain coming in. And we had, 5 years at Cunnamulla. And in the meantime, while I was there, I did a lot of disease control work for a start. And then they offered me a job advising on control for diseases such as pleuro pneumonia. And they gave me a special vehicle on a Commonwealth grant fund, Commonwealth CESG38, and I used to go around and advise all the channel country, talking to graziers there about managing the properties and looking after this disease, diagnosing it, destroying affected cattle and doing post-mortem work, quarantining and all this sort of thing. That was part of the job. I did that, and then in the winter months, and the summer months, of course, I came back and took over my office in Cunnamulla. They gave me relief while I was doing the pleuro work. Well, for this Plero job, they gave me a DeSoto utility, 1500 watt utility. I went to Brisbane to pick this up, and I complained at the time it was only two-wheel drive, and it was only 1500 watt, which was not big enough or suitable enough for the job. The vehicle was fitted with about a 36-gallon fuel tank, 16-gallon water tank. This combined with a 1300-weight portable crush with some lengths of 12 feet long, we used to put out over the back of the utility about 3 or 4 feet, made the whole thing a very overloaded and overworked vehicle. By the time I put on a large tucker box, swag, pull-out winch, chains, tools, all those sort of things, the vehicle was grossly overloaded, but the head office agreed that I must carry on, which I did. Anyway, we had a very bad time. It was a bad year, 1956, and I remember one particular trip. I was to take the crush out to Currawilla, out west of Windora, to inoculate cattle, and on the way out, as usual, one of the back wheels broke, and the vehicle hit the ground, and I had trouble lifting it up, and I had a hand from two shearers who came along, and we cut a gidgey log, and we levered it up with that and changed the wheel. And I went on and got to Morney Station, west of Windora, and it rained. So I stayed a day there with Walter Schaffer and until the rain stopped, and then I had to leave, and I headed out for Currawilla, which was about 22 miles across Morney Plain, which of course was unfortunately those days unsealed black soil road. However, about 5 miles from Morney, from Currawilla, past the JC Hotel, I broke a back axle. And there I am on the side of the road, can't move. So I had to walk back then about 8 miles to a main roads camp. And on the way back, I get bogged all the time. There was a tractor and roller on the side of the road, a main roads outfit. So I unhooked the roller and decided to drive the tractor back to the main roads camp, which I did. And I got there and the engineer wasn't happy because I was using main roads equipment. However, we went wired Brisbane, asked him to send me up a rear axle and bearings and seals for this DeSoto to arrive on Tuesday, which was 2 days away. Anyway, I'd wired it away and away for confirmation. And Brisbane, of course, in their wisdom, wired back and asked me for the engine number of the vehicle. And I wired back and said, the vehicle's 8 miles out along the road. I don't know what it is, but if you check your records, you'll have that down there. Typical of Brisbane. However, they gave me a drive back to the utility. I didn't want to leave it on the side of the road. So the engineer drove me back to the utility, and I rigged up my tent fly, and I camped there for 2 days. And the engineer promised he would bring the axle to me when it arrived, my plane from Windora. However, he came out on the Tuesday and said the axle didn't arrive. So he wired Brisbane again, and they said they would send it up. They missed out on it. They would send it eventually on the next plane, which is a week away. So in the meantime, I'd pulled the old broken axle out of the vehicle, and the engineer then took it back to his camp, and they welded the axle for me so I could move. So he brought the welded axle back to me. Apologised he couldn't stay to help me, so I didn't worry. I'd been camping for about a week at this stage in the mud on my own. So then I went to put the axle back into the vehicle, and it wouldn't fit. And when I looked at it, I found out that the housing was bent, apparently from where it fell onto the road a week before when the wheel broke. And I couldn't get the axle would not go in to the diff housing. So it meant I had to drop the diff housing, undo that, and I pulled it off and enlarged my fire that I had going in the Mulga. And I put the diff housing in that and managed to put it over a log and get it fairly straight. I used an axe to sort of give me a bit of strength. And I eventually got it straight enough to get the axle fitted. I then put it back under the vehicle and had to lift it up with a piece of rope sort of thing to get it up high enough, like bolt it on. And I eventually got the wheels on and away I went. Went on to Currawilla, inoculated the cattle, put the crush up, inoculated the cattle at Currawilla. And I left there then after several days and to come back to Cunnamulla. In the meantime, it rained again and I had trouble coming from Windora across Munro's Flat. It's 2-3 miles of black soil again. I had trouble getting across there. I got across, and came back down the road, and coming back down towards the Lungra, I come around a curve, and the tracks, of course, were only tracks, or the road was only a track those days, and I come around a curve, and here's bog in the middle of the road with a truck, and alongside it on the other side was a big utility, and I couldn't stop. I decided I'd have to try and pass both of them and go through this mud hole. Well, I got her in the middle of my mud hole, and down she went. So here's three vehicles bogged across the road. Anyway, the two men with the other vehicles then came to give me a hand. They said, well, we'll get you out, and we'll get you to pull us out. Well, then as I went to put in the, had the chains on, and went to reverse the vehicle out, and bang, the welded axle broke. So I'm stuck in the middle of a bog hole with a broken axle. So we then decided to get the winch out, pull out my pull-out winch, and we pulled his utility out. He then pulled me out, and the truck, we got the truck out with the winch and the other vehicle. So we camped there, and in the meantime, I, of course, on the way back to Windura, I forgot to mention this, the new axle head was there, so I had that on board. I then fitted the new axle to the vehicle, and the Sato, and came back into Cunnamulla. It was quite a trip, I can tell you. But the whole thing gets back to the fact that they gave me an inefficient vehicle to do this job, and I was expected to do it. The sad part was, of course, at the end of this particular 6 month period, I'd had such a bad time with this DeSoto utility and trying to travel around on in the Channel Country with this heavy load on most of the time over station tracks and what have you, and in the mud. And the vehicle was in a very bad state of repair. I then put it into this garage to have repairs made, and they actually lifted the body off the chassis, and found there were 13 cracks in the chassis from the vehicle being overloaded on these bad tracks. I asked the head office then, I gave them the report, asked them would they exchange this vehicle for about a one-ton four-wheel drive truck if they wanted me to do the same job next year. This, they said, they could not do, they refused to do that, and I was to carry on with the vehicle. However, it eventually got to the stage I couldn't use it, it had got to that stage, and they changed it. We then did not use the crush anymore. They sent me up a Holden FJ utility, and I was expected to carry on with that. One thing that did upset me while I was at the department, I suppose I might have been a bit too severe with some of the regulations, but I did what my conscience told me to do, and I've been continually offered bribes not to do this or do something else, and that upset me no end. I remember one occasion, I had not been in Cunnamulla very long in the early 1950s, and I notified that there were two mobs of sheep crossing from New South Wales into Queensland on the border. Well, I went down and inspected these sheep. There were 5,000 each mob, and I found they were lowest for the lice, which is a disease under the Stock Act, which meant they could not officially travel in Queensland. I told the drovers that they had to dip the sheep and clean them before they could come into town, come along on the stock route. That was about Thursday or Friday of the week, and on the Saturday morning I was working on my car at home, a private vehicle, and the manager of one of the local agents came in. I won't mention his name. He came in and he said he was representing the owner of these sheep. And he said, they don't want them held up, they want to bring them on up to Tewinvale, one of the owner's properties, and dip them there before they travelled on. I told him that was not permissible, that the sheep had to be cleaned before they entered Queensland. He said, he then held out his hand, and I could see he had a roll of notes, money, in the hand, and he said, well, I'll call the owner of the sheep, Mr. Jones. He said, Mr. Jones says that it would be cheap if he had to pay £500, $1,000 at those days, for £500 to get the sheep through. If I was prepared to do that, he thought £500 would be cheap. And he held the money out to me, and I said, look, sir, you're wasting your time. I don't want the money. I'm not being offered a bribe. I'm not interested. All you have to do is dip the sheep, and then they're free to go. He got very upset about this, and he waved the money and said, look, it's cheap to pay $500 to get the writer permit. And I said, no, I'm sorry, I won't do that. He then left very annoyed. That's on a Saturday morning. Now, the Saturday night, my wife and I were getting ready to go to the local picture shop. Just before we left, the phone rang. and it turned out to be my Director of Veterinary Services in Brisbane, Mr. Rod Mulhern. Now this man to me was, he was the boss. What you said goes. He said to me that he was in head office at that moment with the owner of the sheep, plus another director of the DPI, Agriculture and Stock it was in those days, and they'd been discussing this sheep movement, and they decided that under the circumstances that the sheep had to get out of this property, Beamery in New South Wales, because of the flood water, they wanted me to let them go and dip them up the road at Tewinvale. Well, I got a bit upset about this, and I said, Mr. Mulhern, sir, with all due respect, I can't do that. If you are prepared to issue a permit in Brisbane and post it up, I will deliver it. But my conscience will not allow me to issue these sheep with a permit. I've been stopping diseased stock on those truck routes for a long time, and I am not prepared to write a permit and let these diseased sheep travel. I said, if you're prepared to listen, I'll tell you the true story of this, why these sheep are where they are. I then told him that they had tried to move the sheep earlier, and the New South Wales inspector had refused them to move because they were full of lice. And then they held them on the property until this flood came down, and they are now using that as an excuse to get them off into Queensland. I said, that's the story. I said, all they have to do is get the sheep dipped and they can come through. But I said, if you're happy to send a permit up from Brisbane, I will deliver it. But I said, in all conscience, sir, I cannot write a permit. I'm remembering, of course, that just that same morning I'd knocked back £500 for the same thing to write a permit. Anyway, he rang off and he said, well, I'll ring you back. So I got off the phone, I said to my wife, well, I think I've just blown a good job. But as far as I'm concerned, they can go to buggery. I'm not going to write a permit, let these sheep go. So we sat there and waited a while, very apprehensive, and eventually the phone rang again, and it was Mr. Mulhern. He said, well, Gordon, he said, I've discussed this, your side of the story with Mr. The owner, who was a member of parliament, I believe, at the time, discussed with him, and we've decided that what you say is true, and we are not prepared to let the sheep travel. So would you make sure that they dip the sheep before they move and make sure they're free of lice? I said, sir, thank you very much. That pleases me, and I'll go and tell the drivers this accordingly. So then the next move was that the drivers or the agent, they had to put, none of the local properties would let the sheep on their property, of course, because they were lousy. So the agents then hired or purchased, I'm not sure which, spray dip, set it up on the reserve where the sheep were camped, and spent 3 or 4 days, and they dipped these sheep for lice. And when that was done, I then let the sheep travel. What annoyed me was that that same morning I had knocked back £500, which at the time I think it was about a year's salary. I was only earning about £8 or £9 a week, I think, at the time. And I actually rejected a year's salary to write a permit. And on the Saturday night, the same night, my boss in Brisbane had written and rang and said to issue the permit. So you can see why I was so upset. I could have taken the £500 in the morning and written a permit, and nothing would have been done. How you get annoyed when I hear these days of graft and corruption that goes on in high places and people taking bribes, and I just don't like that at all. That's just one incident. That happened a lot of times after that. I had, even when I was in Crow's Nest, I was offered money on several occasions, quite a lot of occasions in fact, to do certain things, and I never accepted it, and I don't believe people should accept these things.